Imagine spending hours perfecting a new stain-removing hack, only to watch your favorite shirt dissolve into a color-smeared mess. By the end of this lecture, you'll travel from ancient soap-making blunders to modern smart machine missteps, discovering why each failure mattered and what it taught us about the science of clean clothes. These early missteps set a cultural expectation that experimentation was essential, an expectation that would fuel centuries of trial and error in households. After the first generations learned to scrub garments on riverbanks, people began to wonder if something could make the work easier and the fabrics brighter. Around 2500 BCE, the ancient Egyptians stumbled upon the principle of alkaline saponification when they mixed natron, a naturally occurring sodium carbonate, with animal fat left over from cooking, and the hot desert sun completed the reaction. The resulting oily paste broke down grease into soap and glycerin, a discovery that turned out to be as much a chemical accident as a pragmatic solution for cleaning the linen used to wrap pharaohs. Egyptians quickly adopted the mixture for both everyday laundry and temple rituals, noting that the freshly washed shrouds smelled faintly of bird something, a hint of the next generation's scent experiments. By the 5th century BCE, Greek artisans were adding lavender, rosemary, and bay leaves to the basic soap, hoping to mask the harsh odor and give a pleasant fragrance to their tunics. But fortunately, the plant pigment sometimes leached into the cloth, leaving a stubborn green hue on a well-known Athenian tunic recovered from a burial site. The Romans, around the 1st century CE, refined the formula by blending olive oil with wood ash, producing a softer, more pliable soap that could be molded into bars, yet they still tossed in powdered frankincense for aristocratic appeal, again risking uneven coloration. In medieval Europe, roughly the 12th century, households began boiling wood ash with water to create lye, convinced that its strong alkalinity could both clean dirt and bleach wool to a bright white. The reality was that the same caustic lye ate away at the linen and wool fibers, leaving garments thin and prone to tearing after only a few washes. These early experiments, full of hopeful innovation and occasional disaster, taught a hard lesson about the balance between cleaning power and fabric integrity, a lesson that would echo forward as laundry migrated from open rivers into the first purpose-built indoor laundry rooms. While manufacturers chased brighter results, everyday innovators at home began tinkering with chemistry in their own basins. The Industrial Revolution flooded the market with hard, mass-produced soaps, a far cry from the artisanal soft soaps of earlier centuries. But the early formulas were engineered for lather, not for the delicate fibers of wool, silk, and cotton, and their overly alkaline pH would often weaken yarns and cause colors to bleed. Households quickly learned that a bright, frothy wash could leave shirts feeling rough as sandpaper, a problem that spurred a wave of home experiments aimed at softening the commercial product. One of the most notorious fads was the 1874 Brill Cream laundry craze, where people added the same hair gel ingredients that gave men glossy coiffures to their detergent, hoping to lubricate fibers, only to end up with a greasy, film-like residue that made garments cling together like wet newspapers. The quest for whiter linens led to the infamous 1888 Jolly Green experiment, when a modest laundry shop in Manchester mixed copper sulfate into a batch of soap to create a chemical brightener. The copper ions did indeed suppress yellowing, but the reaction with the cotton's natural tannins produced a permanent green stain that could not be removed by rinsing or boiling. Users who tried the Jolly Green method reported that their children's undershirts turned a vivid emerald, turning a triumph of industrial chemistry into a cautionary tale about unintended side effects. These misadventures highlighted a crucial lesson. The chemistry of cleaning is a balance between alkalinity, surfactant strength, and the material's own tolerance, a balance manufacturers would not fully understand for decades. The fallout from these household trials forced soap makers to refine their recipes, introducing buffered soaps with added sodium carbonate to moderate pH, and even early forms of optical brighteners, though those too would later cause their own set of dilemmas. As we move forward, the next wave of innovation will shift from plain soap bars to synthetic detergents, and with them, a whole new set of experimental hazards for the curious home cleaner. These backyard recipes highlighted a crucial lesson. Without an understanding of molecular interactions, well-intentioned shortcuts could backfire. When World War I cut off a supply of commercial soap, households across the United States and Europe scrambled for alternatives, giving rise to a lively soap substitute movement that relied on pantry staples like soda ash, borax, and even cornstarch. Mothers would whisk together equal parts of soda ash and grated soap base, then add a dash of cornstarch to thicken the mixture, believing the paste would mimic the lather of store-bought soap. By the 1920s, a fanciful home laundry trend called the egg white wash promised to protect delicate linens and silk by coating fibers with a thin protein film, a technique championed by a popular 1923 women's magazine article. In practice, the egg white coating often trapped dust and sweat, leaving garments looking duller after each wash, because the protein layer resisted rinsing and created a sticky sheen. The core problem was a lack of surfactant science. These homemade blends miss the amphiphilic molecules that lower surface tension and bind oil to water. Without true surfactants, the soda ash cornstarch mixtures removed only surface grime, while the egg white experiments left residues that encouraged mildew on damp fabrics. As a result, many families reported rapid wear and fading of colors, prompting a wave of complaints that eventually pushed manufacturers to reintroduce chemically optimized detergents after the war. If DIY efforts were not entirely wasted, they fostered a spirit of experimentation that spilled over into the 1930s, where rationing again forced households to tweak recipes, laying groundwork for the post-war consumer boom in specialized laundry products. The cycle of improvisation and failure set the stage for a deeper appreciation of chemistry in everyday chores. The theme we'll explore next as we turn to the rise of synthetic detergents and the corporate labs that finally cracked the surfactant code. As chemistry advanced, the next frontier became automation, bringing machines into the bedroom and laundry room. In the wake of World War II, chemists turned the massive surplus of petroleum into a new class of surfactants, and by 1946 brands like Tide were touting petroleum-based cleaning power that promised to lift greasy stains where traditional soap had failed. Homeowners, eager to ride the wave of modernity, tried to boost these early formulas with familiar pantry boosters. The 1953 Super Bright experiment is a classic case, where families added extra borax to the synthetic wash in hopes of achieving a whiter shirt. What they didn't anticipate was that the alkaline borax, combined with the harsher petroleum surfactants, began to eat away at the cellulose fibers of cotton, leaving shirts feeling brittle after just a few washes. At the same time, water utilities across the United States were still delivering hard water rich in calcium and magnesium, and the new detergents formed insoluble complexes that turned the rinse water a milky gray, a phenomenon the consumer press dubbed cloudy water syndrome. Reports in 1955 Consumer Reports noted that, unlike the clear suds of soap, these early synthetics left a persistent film on both fabrics and washing machines, causing premature scaling and a dim sheen on even the brightest linens. The combination of fiber damage and mineral precipitation taught manufacturers that a new chemistry required a new understanding of water quality, leading to the first formulations of water-softening agents in the late 1950s. Yet these lessons were learned in living rooms and laundry rooms alike, setting the stage for the next leap. Machines that could control temperature, agitation, and even water hardness automatically. The failures of hardware prompted inventors to turn to electronics, hoping precision would solve old problems. In the early days of the 20th century, manufacturers rolled out top-load machines with massive gear-driven agitators that spun like tiny tornadoes, delivering more torque than the fabrics could withstand. Home users quickly discovered that denim jeans and sturdy work shirts would emerge with seams torn to ribbons, the direct consequence of the machine's uncalibrated force and a lack of any feedback mechanism. Engineers at the time blamed the problem on oversized drive pulleys, but without sensors to modulate motion, the machine simply kept tearing through the material. Fast forward to the 1960s, when an energy-saving mandate encouraged a cold water-only experiment, promising lower utility bills by eliminating the heated cycle altogether. The trade-off was brutal. Oily motor oil, lipstick, and butter stains that would normally melt away in warm water now clung stubbornly to cotton, leaving consumers frustrated and factories scrambling for a fix. This push for efficiency overlooked the chemistry of oil emulsification, a lesson we saw earlier in Section 3, when backyard soap recipes failed without molecular insight. Around the same era, a well-intended metal drum rust test was conducted to prove durability, yet manufacturers used an untested coating that peeled under repeated washes. When the coating failed, rust particles migrated into the water, imprinting a reddish hue onto every load, effectively turning clean laundry into a rust-stained disaster. The rust not only ruined garments, but also corroded internal components, shortening machine lifespans and driving up maintenance costs. These mechanical misadventures underscored a simple truth. Brute force and cheap shortcuts could not substitute for precise control, a realization that set the stage for the electronic revolution that followed. Even as machines grew smarter, the human element, how people used and misused them, remained a source of unexpected failures. In the mid-1970s, manufacturers finally slipped microcontrollers into washers, promising automatic temperature control that could read a thermistor and adjust heating in real time. The idea was brilliant, but the firmware was rushed. A missing conditional check, meant that when the sensor read a sudden drop, the controller interpreted it as cold enough and kept the heater on, leading to several overheating cycles that scorched fabrics and even warped metal drums. One notorious case involved a 1978 prototype from a Japanese firm that burst its own plastic door panels after a summer heat wave triggered the bug repeatedly. The next big electronic leap came in 1982 with the turbo steam feature, a clever attempt to reduce static by injecting a fine mist of steam into the tumbling load. Engineers thought the added moisture would disappear in the spin cycle, but they miscalculated the ventilation capacity of the dryer washer hybrids. Moist air lingered, and in humid climates it fostered mildew on towels and even inside the machine's seals. Users, delighted by the promise of fresh out of the dryer clothes, often ran the turbo steam on cottons and synthetics alike, ignoring the manual's warning that delicate fibers could trap water and develop a sour odor. At the same time, the user interface was still in its infancy. A set of brightly colored buttons labeled Delicates actually invoked the heavy-duty wash program because the button matrix was wired backwards in the early versions of a popular American brand. The resulting over-agitation tore lace shawls and shredded infant blankets, turning the intended convenience into a costly disaster for households. These missteps taught engineers that beyond clever circuitry, they needed rigorous testing, clear labeling, and a realistic sense of how everyday people would press a button without reading the fine print. The lessons from those early smart cycle trials would shape the next generation of laundry electronics, as we'll see when we move from flawed prototypes to the era of digital displays and programmable cycles. These contemporary setbacks underscore a timeless truth. Innovation without rigorous real-world testing repeats history's mistakes. In a rush to market green laundry solutions, manufacturers introduced enzyme pods in 2018 that promised biodegradable cleaning power at low temperatures, but the formula tended to precipitate when the water stayed under 20 degrees Celsius, leaving tiny specks that stubbornly clung to white shirts and turned them gray. Consumers complained that the very promise of cold water washing energy savings and reduced wear had backfired because the undissolved enzymes acted like microscopic lint. Around the same time, a startup called NanoClean launched a line of detergent infused with titanium dioxide nanoparticles, advertising anti-odor properties that would last through multiple washes. However, laboratory tests later showed that the particles lodged themselves in the weave of synthetic fibers, increasing static electricity and even causing a faint metallic sheen after repeated cycles. By 2021, independent labs warned that the nanoparticles could be released into wastewater, sparking a small but vocal environmental backlash. Adding a digital twist, the 2020 rollout of an AI-optimized load sensing system in several high-end washers promised to calculate the perfect detergent dose based on weight, but a firmware bug misread the sensor's output by up to 30%, leading to overdosing that left soap scum on both interiors and exteriors of machines, and in severe cases, caused premature corrosion of drum bearings. This glitch reminded us, as I saw in Section 5 when hardware leaps faltered, that even the smartest electronics can fall short without careful calibration. Moreover, the human element discussed in Section 6 resurfaced. Users, trusting the AI, stopped pre-checking detergent levels, inadvertently amplifying the problem. These episodes illustrate how the pursuit of eco-efficiency and high-tech convenience can create new, unexpected laundry disasters, setting the stage for the next chapter, in which we examine how regulatory bodies and consumer advocacy groups finally stepped in to demand accountability. Armed with these lessons, we can approach the next wave of laundry technology with both optimism and caution. First, the chemistry of cleaning must be married to material science. The 1962 crash of a phosphates-heavy detergent on woolen uniforms taught us that surfactants screaming for high alkalinity will literally eat away delicate fibers, prompting the later shift toward pH-balanced enzymes in the 1980s. Second, machines have to anticipate human error. The 1975 microcontroller debacle, where an overload sensor was bypassed by a mislabeled delicates button, reminded us that fail-safes for mislabeling and weight limits are not optional extras, but core engineering requirements. Third, every new feature needs a built-in loop for real-world feedback. Just as the 2019 greenwash claims about biodegradable pods collapsed after consumers reported residue on baby clothes, a rapid consumer testing pipeline could have caught the problem before mass production. Across the centuries, from the early lye-based stains of the 1900s to today's AI-driven wash cycles, the pattern is clear. Success hinges on chemistry, engineering, and human behavior working in concert. If we design surfactants that respect fiber tolerances, embed sensors that forgive occasional user missteps, and keep an open channel for user reports, we turn failures into data points for improvement. Imagine a future where a smart drum can sense a cotton poly blend and automatically adjust water hardness, while a mobile app prompts the user to double-check the load tag before starting. As we look ahead, consider what the next failed experiment might look like. Perhaps a self-cleaning machine that uses ultrasonic vibrations, or a solar-powered washer that struggles in cloudy climates. And think about how you can be part of a smarter testing community that catches those hiccups before they reach the marketplace. The challenge, then, is not to avoid risk entirely, but to build systems that learn from every rinse and spin, turning each setback into a stepping stone for the next breakthrough.